Well, good morning. It's great to see everybody on this very beautiful Sunday morning. Delighted that you are with us. If you are visiting with this church family, as I am this week, we're especially glad that you're here. And we hope you'll have an occasion to come and be with them again. I want to begin this morning by just telling you how very happy I am to be with you once again. We mentioned the Bible class hour that we have been together twice before in the past, but it's been over a decade now since we've spent some time together, and so I have very much look forward to this particular day and these 4 days that we can spend together as we study, and it's a pleasure to be reunited with you, to meet so many of you again who are still here, and to see so many new faces who are now worshiping with this congregation, which is just, of course, the way that that ought to be. I'm very happy for the good progress that this church continues to make. Wonderful to be with all of you. I appreciate very much the invitation of your shepherds to be a part of these 4 days and our studies together, and hope that I will equip myself well in their eyes and in the eyes of God above all else. But I appreciate these men and their invitation. And it's a pleasure to be with Andrew and with Sean. These are two truly great young gospel preachers, and I am honored to get to be with them. The one thing that I know about this church, given that they are here, is that I know that you are accustomed Sunday after Sunday after Sunday to excellence in gospel preaching. I know that for a fact, and I will try not to mess that up or disappoint you too much, but I really do appreciate the wonderful talent of these two young men and the encouragement that I know you give them. I am happy to be with you. I trust that you'll be with us this afternoon and then Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday night. I hope you'll bring somebody with you. I want to tell you that you can invite somebody to come and be with us, and you can ask them for 1 hour of time. And I promise you that we will be out in that hour. And that means that if our song leader sings 45 minutes a song, I'm going to have about 13 minutes to preach, but we will do it. We'll get you out in an hour. And we hope that our studies together will help us all as we talk about some important things about the guardrails on the road of life. You know, in the great state of Tennessee, there are certain counties that if you are convicted of drunk driving, you will receive, compliments of the state, a very special new wardrobe. They will give you a bright orange vest, and they will require you to wear it for 3 particular days, 8-hour periods at a time. And stenciled in 4-inch tall letters on those bright orange vests are the words, "I am a drunk driver." And the state of Tennessee and certain counties will put you on the side of the road, and they will have you pick up trash for those 8 hours wearing that bright orange vest. It's called a shame punishment, and it's designed to say to everybody who sees you, look, if you drink and drive, this is what could happen to you. There's a penalty. There's a penalty for that. Well, I want to tell you this morning that the convicted in this good state are not the only ones who dress themselves in their mistakes. We all tend to do that to some degree or another. We wear vests that say, I disappointed my mom and dad. I wasted my youth. I neglected my kids. I lied to my wife. I defied or disobeyed my God. And we try to cover those vests up. Sometimes we cover up with smiles, or we do a lot of good work, and we're just sure that we can cover those up so that nobody will ever see. But deep down, we know that we're there. So often, deep down, we have not dealt with them in the way that God says that we should, and so we think, oh, if only I had done better the first time. Well, the fact of the matter is, ladies and gentlemen, God is trying to keep you from those very mistakes. And so in His Word, He gives us some guardrails, some guidelines to help us do better. If you were not in the Bible class period this morning, let me just introduce very quickly the concept upon which we are operating over these 4 days. These images are from the Pacific Coast Highway in California. That road hugs the coastline as close as possible while still being safe. And the simple implement that is in place there that's designed to keep a wayward or a sleepy or a distracted driver safe is simply a guardrail. Usually they're gray metal. They are anchored deep. And they are not in the most dangerous part of the road. They're just inside that most dangerous area. And the message is clear. If you'll stay inside this boundary, everything will be okay. But if you violate the boundary, if you either go through it or around it or over it, very terrible things are going to result. Now, you hit a guardrail, then you'll do some damage. I mean, no doubt about that. You hit a guardrail with your car, you're gonna scratch your paint. You may dent up your fender. You may break a headlight. But all things being equal, you hit a guardrail and it stays in place and keeps you inside the boundary. All things being equal, it will save your life. And so it's important. We respect that. And again, as we said in the Bible class period, I think all of us are glad that they are there. Well, the fact of the matter is, God has some boundaries, some guardrails in place as well. And we ought to be grateful that they are well. They are there as well. And so we have this key verse for our series, that a wise individual foresees, sees in advance. A wise individual sees the evil and he will hide himself. That is, he understands what's on the other side of the boundary that God has put in place. And he determines, because he's wise, he determines, because everything God says, we saw in the Bible class period, Deuteronomy 6, verse 24, everything God says is for our good always. And so, a wise individual sees the evil and he hides himself. But a foolish individual passes on. He believes the rules don't apply to him for whatever reason, and he is punished. Now, we define a guardrail this way. We say a guardrail is a personal standard of behavior that becomes a matter of conscience. In other words, we have put God's word in place in our life. We have looked at God's word. We have analyzed what he has said about a matter, and we've embraced it and accepted it, and we have put it in place in our life, and we have made it so now that it's a matter of conscience for us. If we violate that, if we violate that boundary, our conscience will smite us about that and tell us that we have done wrong. And so to the one who knows to do good and does not do it, to that individual it's sin. So, what does that mean? Well, it means it in our marriage. It means it in our friendships, our dating life, our finances, our morality, our integrity, in the way that we deal with the kingdom of God, in our use of time. There should be a standard of behavior that if we begin to violate that, lights are going to flash, sirens are going to sound, our conscience is going to smite us. Now, one of the places where God has put guardrails in place is around our friendships, around our relationships, just as you would expect. Because the fact of the matter is that relationships matter. They matter to God and they matter to us. Now, let's be honest this morning. We have relationships on so many different levels. Some are simply superficial and they really don't impact us very much at all. But others are profound and they frame for us in many ways the course and the direction of our lives. And so we have college roommates and we have coworkers and neighbors and we have family members. We have not only our children, but we have the parents or the friends of our children. We have our friends. We have those that we just do life with. All of those relationships in some ways impact us. The Bible says that. And so God said nobody lives to himself and nobody dies to himself. And that's exactly right, isn't it? And we need it that way. God knew that we did. So God created us that way. We get tired. We get scared. We get careless or clumsy or tempted. We get distraught about a variety of things. And so, God made it so that we would have relationships where, hopefully, if we have chosen wisely in those relationships, we have individuals who will be a voice of reason and an influence of strength. So much so that God said to the wise man, two are better than one. Because then, if one falls, what will the other do? Well, he will lift up his companion. And so, God made it so that we need this in our lives. Barbra Streisand many years ago sang the song, "People who need people are the luckiest people in the world." She was wrong about that. She's wrong about lots and lots of things, by the way, but that's another sermon for another time. No, people who need people, that is the only kind of people there are in this world, because that's the way God made us. I had a good illustration of that not long ago. Vicki and I, back for our anniversary in January, we didn't have much time, so we went over to Disney. Walt Disney World is one hour from my house. And so we went over to Disney and spent a little time over there. And we went to Hollywood Studios. My favorite ride in Hollywood Studios is the Tower of Terror. Anybody here ever ride on the Tower of Terror? Love the Tower of Terror. It's my favorite ride at Hollywood Studios. And so, but I have to ride it by myself. Vicki won't ride it. Vicki's philosophy is that any ride that has the word terror in it, she wants nothing to do with. My philosophy is, if it has the word terror in it, it's going to be really, really good. And so I have to ride it by myself, which is all right. I don't mind. So I wait in line, and we're ready to get off. If you've ever ridden it, you go into this elevator-type shaft, and you sit in these rows, and as luck would have it, was on the first row, which is always the best. The first row is always the best on a ride. And so I sit down, and this lady and a little girl who's about 12 years old, the little girl gets in, and she sits next to me, and a lady is by her side. And I'm listening to the conversation, and what I deduce is that the lady is her aunt. And so the aunt has brought her little girl to Disney, which is very nice. And so the doors close, and we begin to go. And the little girl is scared. She says to her aunt, she says, "I don't think I can do this. I'm scared. I don't want to do this." And so I looked down at her, and I said, "Hey, listen. I've been on this ride many, many times. It is great. You're going to love it. You're going to have so much fun." And she looks at me like, "I don't know who you are, mister, and why are you talking to me?" And so I stopped. I didn't say anything else. Well, if you've ever ridden the ride, you know that you go through some holograms and things, and then finally, you get to a point where you stop, and it's absolute blackness, and then the doors open, and you're looking out over the park, which is really nice, and then the doors close, and you are in absolute darkness, and you know you're about to drop. You don't know when, but you know you're about to drop, and it was right then in the darkness that I felt this little arm wrap around mine, and I heard a voice out of the darkness say, "I don't know who you are, mister, but I gotta talk. I gotta hold on to somebody." And I thought, you know what? That's the way God made us. God made us because we need to hold on to somebody. And so He gave us these wonderful relationships in life. And two are better than one. If one falls, he will lift up his companion. That's the way God made us. Now, let me tell you who understands that. Moms and dads understand that. And we understand that about our kids and about our grandkids. And so that's why moms and dads, from a very young age, tell us that we need to spend our time with very good people. And they taught us that sometimes the most popular people are not the best people. Because moms and dads understand that ultimately, those with whom we do life, those with whom we take that walk that we talked about in the Bible class period, they will influence the direction and the quality of our life. Our moms and dads understand that. And I think to a large degree, as we're growing up, we understand that. But the problem is that line defining what is good and bad, who is good and evil, sometimes get fuzzy in our minds. And so oftentimes the trouble that we got into came from those influences that we allowed. Now that may have been a friend who dared us to do something that was foolish, or maybe they dared us to do something that was illegal. Or maybe it was a friend who offered us our first taste of alcohol, or our first cigarette, or maybe our first hit of a drug. Or maybe it was a friend that encouraged us to do something in school that we normally would not do, or maybe to cheat on a test. Maybe it was a friend that led us in a way that ultimately we got involved in some kind of immorality. And now, here we are, and we are years later, and we still have that in our mind, and we are wearing that bright orange vest emotionally or with guilt. And maybe that led to a lifelong battle with guilt or shame or hurt, or maybe addiction. The problem is that we didn't hit God's guardrail. Or we hit it, we knew it was there, but we didn't pay any attention. And so we went through it or around it or over it in some way. And what a crash it was. Now, let's be real honest about that. Our friends may have influenced along that line. And they may have had a part in leading us that way. But let's be really, really honest here. Ultimately, that was our decision, our choice, our behavior, our action. And so we need to make sure that we listen to those words that God speaks and those guardrails that He puts in place. In the Bible class period, we looked at this passage out of 1 Corinthians 15:33. Don't be deceived, and that disclaimer is there because it's so easy to be deceived. And so he says, look, don't be deceived. Evil companions will corrupt good habits. Bad company will destroy. As one translation says, bad company will destroy good morals. Can we say just a word about this, by the way? This verse, ladies and gentlemen, was not written to the high school teacher in a local church to use in a Friday night devotional. This verse was written to a church. The evil companions in this verse was not the unwashed Pierce kid down the street who spends his weekend in a bar. The evil companions in this verse were full-grown men and women, young and old alike, who were not living as they should. People to whom he wrote back in chapter 5, when he said about those who were caught up in immorality that we'll talk about Wednesday night, when he said, look, your glory about this is not good. Don't you know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump. Don't you understand that what you are saying to each other, the encouragement you're giving to each other in this wrong behavior, is going to cause terrible, terrible harm. And so they were not doing what Proverbs 27 says, as iron sharpens iron, so one person sharpens another. They were not doing that at Corinth. They should have been helping each other, should have been in these relationships, these behaviors, these words that were just so far out of line. They should have been stepping up to each other and saying, hey, you know what? That's not right. We shouldn't do that. You shouldn't do that. We are better people than this. But they were not. No wonder Paul said, don't be deceived. Your morals, your values, your character, your priorities, and your reputation will be profoundly impacted by those that you make your close and intimate friends. And so, here's a principle that we need to understand. One key principle. Look at the verse carefully with me. Proverbs 13 and beginning in verse 20. Walk with the wise and you will become wise. But a companion of fools will suffer harm. I want you to look at that verse and we want to say two things about this. I want you to notice this verse is important to where we're going this morning. All right? Number one, there is a promise here. Did you catch that? The promise is walk with the wise and you will become wise. In other words, wisdom is contagious. So we see that everywhere in the Bible. So, what happens? Well, Joshua walks with his mentor Moses, and Solomon with his father David, and Timothy with the apostle Paul. Walk with the wise, and you will become wise. In the secular world, we see the exact same thing. So, Alexander the Great learned from Aristotle, who learned from Plato, who learned from Socrates. But all of us, let's bring it down to where we live, all of us have those relationships. We have moms and dads or friends or family members or we have heroes who profoundly impact our lives. And here's the promise that God gives. Don't miss this. Walk with the wise and you will become wise because wisdom is contagious. Well, who's a wise person here? He's not talking about somebody who can score 1600 on the SAT. Now, wisdom in the Proverbs is somebody who understands that every element of life is interconnected, who understands life from the big picture view. A wise individual is one who understands that everything you do today, everything you say, every behavior that you have, every relationship that you're involved with today, it will have an impact on the person that you will be tomorrow. And tomorrow, when you go through life again, everything that you do tomorrow, if God gives you a tomorrow and the next day, everything that you've done yesterday and everything you do tomorrow will have an impact on your life in that third day. A wise person is one who understands that there are no isolated events, no isolated thoughts. There are no isolated relationships, no isolated habits or lack of habits. When you understand this, it will profoundly impact the way that you view what God has given you. It will impact the way you view your body and your health. Because you will understand that you are a steward of the body that God has given you. What you do today with your health, with the body that God has given you, it will impact the person you will be tomorrow. What you do today with your finances, the decisions that you make, that we'll talk about, Lord willing, tomorrow night, they will impact the stewardship that you will be able to have the next day, and the day after that, and the day after that. It will affect everything in your life when you understand that your world is interconnected. So, there is a promise. Walk with the wise. You'll be wise. But there is also a warning. Did you notice that? And here's the warning. The companion of fools will suffer harm. Well, that's not what I expect that to say. You see, in Hebrew parallelism, if you say, walk with the wise and you'll be wise, you would expect the next line to be, but a companion of fools will become a fool. But that isn't what he says. He says the companion of fools will pay a price for that. A companion of fools will suffer harm. The fool in the book of Proverbs is somebody who knows the difference between right and wrong, but really doesn't care. Or the person who knows the difference between right and wrong, and they care about that, but they believe that somehow they are immune from the warnings that God has given in the book of wisdom. And so, a companion of fools will end up being where he should not be. So, let's think about that as we kind of get to the heart of what we wanted to say this morning. If you're taking notes on that little sheet, I'm going to go through several things here very quickly. We're not going to talk about any of these at any length. But I want to mention several things to you. What are some of the guardrails that ought to warn us when in our friendships we are going somewhere that we should not go? What are some of the guardrails that in our friendships and relationships ought to warn us that we're about to go somewhere that we should not go? I want to mention several of these to you. I'm just going to mention them quickly. We're not going to talk about them much, but let's think about them, these guardrails that we need to put in place. Here we go. Number one, you hit a guardrail, first of all. You hit a guardrail when you realize that your friend's core values are radically different than your own. You hit a guardrail when you realize that your friend's core values are radically different than your own. When you realize that your friend's definition of success and fun and good and righteousness are radically different than your definition of success and fun and good and righteousness. When you realize that their attitudes about people and about God are different than yours. When it dawns on you that your value system, that what you want for your marriage and for your family, what you want for your finances and your spirituality is radically different than the direction your friends are going, that should be a guardrail to you. I mean, light should flash and sirens should sound. God is trying to keep you from being influenced by them. God is trying to keep you from going over the edge and ruining your life. And so you get a guardrail when you realize that your friend's core values are radically different than yours. Secondly, you get a guardrail when you find yourself trying to defend the wrong behavior of your friends. Think about that. You hit a guardrail when you find yourself trying to defend the wrong behavior of your friends. So, if you are a teenager here this morning, and you're saying things to your mom and dad, because your mom and dad are talking to you about somebody you're spending time with, and so your response to them is, look, you just don't know them the way I do. You just don't understand them. I'm going to tell you, that's going to be a guardrail to you. If the two people in this world who love you more than anybody else and know you better than anybody else are warning you about somebody and you're having to try to defend the wrong behavior of somebody, that's a guardrail. If you're spending time with somebody who's always in trouble, always pushing the envelope, and yet their difficulties, their faults, their sins, their failures are always somebody else's fault. It wasn't their fault. You need to wake up and see the truth about that. When you try to defend behavior you know is wrong, sirens should sound and lights should flash. God's trying to keep you from being influenced by them. He's trying to keep you from going over the abyss and losing something valuable. Number three, you hit a guardrail when you feel pressure to compromise. When you're spending time with somebody and you have made a friend of somebody so that you now feel pressure to accept as right what you have always known to be wrong, when you feel pressure to behave in ways that you have always understood and known and believed are out of bounds, then you're hitting a guardrail. And maybe that's just skipping a church service, or maybe it's going to a movie that you wouldn't naturally or normally go to, or maybe it's doing some social drinking. But that uneasiness that you're feeling is your conscience. And your conscience is hitting a guardrail. I want to say to you, you cannot spend time with somebody who tells lies or cuts corners or schemes to deceive or devalues your mom and dad or corrodes your character and believe that anything good is going to come from that. I mean, Garth Brooks sang a few years ago. He sang, you know, I've got friends in low places where the whiskey drowns and the beer chases my blues away. And he said, it'll be okay. No, it really won't. You are never going to find friends of high quality in low places. You hit a guardrail when you feel pressure to compromise. And so, lights should flash and sirens should sound. God's trying to keep you from being influenced by them. God's trying to keep you from going over the edge and ruining your life. There's a corollary to that. And that is that you hit a guardrail when you find yourself pretending to be someone other than who you are. That's a guardrail. And so, if you are dating a person and you find yourself having to pretend to like things that you really have never liked, and you're having to do things that you would never do, that's a warning sign. If your mom and dad, again, the two people who love you more than anybody and know you better than anybody, if your mom and dad and your friends are saying to you, you know what? When you're around that person, you're a completely different person. You're not yourself. When you're around that person, you are not yourself at all. You act differently. You behave differently. You talk differently. That ought to be a guardrail to you. If you get a guardrail when you find yourself pretending to be somebody other than who you are, when that happens, light should flash and sirens should sound. God's trying to keep you from being influenced by them. He's trying to keep you from going over the edge and ruining your life. And by the way, you hit a guardrail when you see yourself becoming more like them than they are becoming like you. You hit a guardrail when you wake up one day and you realize that your friends, who may not share all of your values, when you find yourself becoming much more like them than they are becoming like you, there's a problem there. Solomon said, Proverbs 14 and 16, a wise man fears and departs from evil, but a fool boasts. A fool says, you know what, it'll be all right. I know this maybe isn't going in the right direction, but it's all right. I'm so strong. Nothing bad's going to happen to me here. God's trying to keep you from being influenced in a way that you go over the edge and ruin your life. And then one final thing. You hit a guardrail when you hope the people you love and care about the most don't find out where you've been or who you've been with. I want you to look at that carefully. You hit a guardrail when you hope that the people you love and care about the most don't find out where you've been or who you've been with. And so, here's what I mean by that. If you tense up at the thought that your mom and dad or Christian friends or somebody that you respect would know where you've been or with whom you've been spending time, if that makes you uncomfortable, if you've already in your mind formulated an excuse or a defense in case somebody happens to see you somewhere or with someone, and you've already had to work out in your mind how you're going to explain that away and make that okay, that's a guardrail. You're fitting a guardrail in that. Sirens are sounding, lights are flashing, and God is trying to keep you from being influenced in a way that you go over the edge and ruin your life. But let's understand something. It's not a call. It's not a call for us to just separate ourselves from everybody and not have any friendships with people who aren't Christians. We're not asked by God to live a monastic existence. We are to shine as lights among those with whom we live. I would imagine there are probably people in this audience who are here because you had a friendship with somebody who was not a Christian. And over the course of time, they influenced you for good. So I'm not saying that we should separate ourselves from everybody. But I am saying that we have to live what we saw in the Bible class period. Be very careful then how you live. Not as unwise, but as wise. Making the most of every opportunity because the days are evil. And therefore, do not be foolish. But understand what the Lord's will is. You know, in your neighborhood, you may not be able to control how your neighbor maintains his home or takes care of his yard. You may not be able to do anything about that. But you can do something about your home and your yard. You can do something about that. And in this world, you know, sometimes we find ourselves in school and work, neighborhoods, recreational activity. We find ourselves sometimes surrounded by people we can't control what they say, and we can't control what they do, and we can't control their attitudes. But we can control who we are in all of that. We can find and we can make genuine friends. A friend loves at all times, Solomon said, and a brother is born for adversity. A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. I want to stop with this. All right? Take a look at the screen here for just a moment. Anybody happen to recognize what that might be? Well, of course. We understand. We know Mount Rushmore. We recognize those faces. We appreciate those presidents and what they meant to our nation. And so they are inscribed in an amazing monument. But I want to ask you this morning. If we could, for each and every one of us, if we could take those faces away And we could look at the relationships that we have in our lives that are absolutely critical to us. Who would we put on our own personal Mount Rushmore? What I'm asking you is, who are the people who have helped you be conformed to the image of God's dear Son? Who are the people who have inspired you and encouraged you and maybe pushed you and motivate you to be a better person? Who are true and genuine friends? Who would you put on your own personal Mount Rushmore? Now, here's the other side of that. How many people would have you on their personal Mount Rushmore because you have been that kind of a friend? You've been that kind of a relationship where you have given of yourself to that relationship and to that person, and you have made them better because they know you. How many of you would be on those personal Mount Rushmores? Who have been a true and genuine friend? You see, a genuine friend will love you when everybody else has left you. A genuine friend will hold you when you're hurt, and they will lift you when you have fallen, and they will stay by your side when you're alone. And a genuine friend will listen without judging and forgive without asking, and they will stand with you without wavering. And most importantly, a genuine friend will make you a better person because you spent time with them. No wonder it's important that we put some guardrails in place around our relationships. A man who has friends must himself be friendly. And there's a friend who sticks closer than a brother. That's the kind of relationships that we ought to have with each other. We typically read the last part of Proverbs 18:24 and apply it to Christ, the friend who sticks closer than a brother. Well, there is an application to be made with that. It probably would not have been Solomon's first application. He's talking about life, our life, your life, my life, and saying we have to be that kind of person. But as we close this morning, let's just make the observation that often is made, that in fact, Christ is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. That's why we sing the songs that we do. We sing the song that says, what a friend we have in Jesus. He has all the characteristics of a true friend, a genuine friend. He's loyal. He says, I will never leave you, nor will I forsake you. He's forgiving, though your sins are as scarlet. He says, I will make them as white as snow. He is unselfish. Greater love is no one than this, and he laid down his life for his friends. Every page of the New Testament says that he loves us. And here's what he asks in return. You are my friends if you do what I command you. So how about you this morning? Maybe you're in this audience and you've never been baptized into Christ, or maybe you have done that in the past and you can come home to God today. You are my friends if you do what I command you, he says. And so if you're in this audience this morning and you need to be baptized into Christ, or if in some public way you need to come home to him, this invitation really is designed for you. And so today, if there's a response to God that you need to make in a public way, and we can help you, we hope you'll let us. Let's stand and let's sing.